Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back. It's Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Like many immigrants, Nigerian-born author Oke Ndibe always dreamed about coming to the United States. As a boy, he would watch the American Westerns that aired throughout Africa, distributed there by the CIA in an effort to keep Africa out of communist control. He saw America as a country of suave, heroic figures, and he collected the trading cards of American actors, once even renaming himself Tony Curtis. And it wasn't until Ndibe arrived in the United States that he learned reality was not quite the same as he'd imagined. He writes about his experience immigrating to America and becoming an American in his new memoir, Never Look an American in the Eye, Flying Tortoises, Colonial Ghosts, and the Making of a Nigerian American. And he joins us now in the studio. Oke Ndibe, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
This book is full of such beautiful writing. I just want to give people a sense of the journey that you took, and I was wondering if you might be able to read just the beginning passage of it to us.
I'll be happy to. I spent much of my childhood drifting in and out of dreams. Sometimes I pined for a piping hot plate of pounded yam and egusi soup filled with succulent meat, beef bones with coagulant marrows I could suction into my mouth with just the right sucking action. Soft, fresh fish that melted on the tongue, and chewy, smoked fish or hard stockfish that one day I overheard an elder castigate as nutritionless, even though he saluted it for working the dentures to stalwart strength. I dared to dream in the day, wide-eyed, often as I listened to my parents' catechism that a good name, which they had in ample supply, surpassed riches which they didn't have.
Oke Ndibe, reading a short excerpt of his new memoir, Never Look an American in the Eye. Just from that beginning passage, we get pulled in to the sense that much of your childhood was spent in this dream state about what could be, what might be,
yes,
in other places, in another life. How did America fit into that dream?
Well, my first fascination was actually with the UK, with Britain, because Britain was, if you like, the founder of Nigeria. The British put together the behemoth that is called Nigeria today. And so when our people talked about Obodo Oyibo, the land of the white people, they meant Britain exclusively. And so Britain was the first, if you like, the first fantasy that I had. I wanted to go to Britain badly. And then one day I overheard a conversation between some elders who were drinking in a bar. And one of them began to talk about communism. And he said that in communism, everything was owned in common. And that you could go to the, you know, biggest mansion and choose the best bed if you were the first person to arrive. That no car was ever locked, so you could see a Mercedes-Benz car and, you know, just get to the driver's seat and drive away. And so I became a communist, as a child, because I was born poor. Yeah. And I felt that this was my opportunity to sleep in the best beds, in the best mansions, and to drive the best cars.
So how did a dream of America overcome Britain and the promise of communism?
In the end, it came through American wrestling. I discovered American professional wrestling visiting a Nigerian city where American wrestling was shown on television. And here I saw mammoth-sized men. I didn't know that men that big existed anywhere in the world. And here they would fly from the top of from the top ropes and smash their bodies into another man lying prostrate on the mat. And I was wondering, I said, wow, how could somebody so big fall on another person and not just smash them to bits? And so I began to pay attention to America. And then
I don't know what to think that professional wrestling was your entree to America.
Well, believe me, it was a number of things, though. You know, so it was professional wrestling. It was also American movies. Mm-hmm. You know, it was that at one point there were a kind of chewing gums that were very prevalent in Nigeria, and each one came with a small card that contained the name of an American city. So you could see one that said Alabama, and that name so resonated. But then there were also great American actors, and one of them was Tony Curtis, and my baptismal name was Anthony, so I adopted Tony Curtis as my name. And then finally, I think that what brought me around was discovering American literature.
American literature?
Yes.
Any books or writers in particular?
Well, I actually in Nigeria as a young child, well, not as a young child now, but in high school, I discovered the writing of Richard Wright. Mm. I discovered, you know, the story of the native son, Bigger Thomas, and began to read John Steinbeck and a bit of Faulkner. And so I was drawn, you know, there was something magical in the landscape that they were describing drew me in.
I have to ask though, so Faulkner and Wright and that world of American literature is almost the cultural opposite.
Yes.
Well, it is the cultural opposite of the fantasy land that gets projected through Hollywood.
That's
or
right.
Professional wrestling.
That's
I mean, right. Obviously, it was an evolution for you.
That's right.
But how did you reconcile in your mind that all of these things
yes.
could come from this same country,
the same land? Well, so that added, in my view, to this charmed country, this very seductive place that's America. So on the one hand, I had discovered American wrestling, discovered that there are men who are larger than life physically. And then I was discovering just enchanting names, you know, a name like Mississippi, like Alabama, Milwaukee, you know. So those names yeah. were new to us. And then as I began to read American writers, I began to see a different texture to this land. And one of the things that struck me, by the way, was reading the story of reading stories about the black struggle in America mm-hmm. to achieve full citizenship in this country. So all of that moved me. So there is a tapestry, if you like, of America that then formed me, and I became open to coming to America.
Well, what made you ultimately decide that you did want to come to America?
Well, I didn't decide that I wanted okay. to come to America. It's just that opportunity came. Given a choice, I would still have gone to Britain first. At this point, as I became an adult, of course, I knew that the idea of communism as everybody having, you know, great riches shared in common was a fairy tale. But I was open to Britain. It's just that the great Nigerian novelist, Chinua Achebe, invited me to come to America and be the founding editor of a magazine that he published.
Right. Yes. We are very glad that he did, because our nation is better for you having been here. But I have to say, some of the language that you use in describing your originally being charmed or enchanted by the idea of America is, it is part of so many immigrants' stories.
Yes.
Here in the United States, of what initially drew them here. Mm-hmm. But of course, upon arrival, the complex truth of America is what you're confronted with.
That's right.
Not just the charm or the enchantment.
That's right.
And I mean, within, as you write in your memoir, Never Look an American Look an American in the Eye, you came in, what, 1988? And within 10 days of your arrival in America, you were almost arrested at a bus stop?
Well, exactly 13 days after I came to America, I was at a bus stop in Amherst, Massachusetts, where I lived at the time, waiting for a bus to go to UMass and see a Nigerian professor. And a police officer, I have to tell the story quickly, but it's told in detail in the book, and a police officer came from behind and tapped me in the shoulder and invited me to come to the back of the bus stop. And when I went, he said to me, "You know what this is about, right?" I said, "No, I didn't." And he said there had been a bank robbery, and I fit the description of the person who robbed the bank. And so quite early, 13 days after I arrived in this country, I came face to face with what later, years later, I will have a name for, which is racial profiling.
So that was how you were confronted with part of the truth of what America is. So in a sense, the nation was reacting to you as a new arrival. How did you react to what you discovered about this country, both good and bad?
Well, the first thing I discovered about America was this thing they call winter. So I had arrived in this country on December 10, 1988, and I came wearing a light shirt and a light jacket. I had read in novels about winter, but I liken winter to cold, dry weather in Nigeria that we call Harmattan, which means that in the morning the temperature might be 70. That was our idea of cold. And so Chinua Achebe had arranged for a professor in New York, a Nigerian professor, to pick me up. Typical of Nigerians, he was running late. And so since I didn't see him, I decided to venture outside. And it was a particularly sunny day. Well, I was hit by a swirling gust of Arctic air. And I turned back quickly and took a seat in the arrival lounge, determined to wait for weeks if that was what it took. So America, winter set my tone, set the tone for my encounter with America.
And that's not a very good tone.
No, it wasn't a very good tone at all. And then 4 days later, I was invited out by an American woman to go to lunch. And since she had proposed to take, you know, that we go to lunch, I thought that what happened in Nigeria, which is that a person who invites you to lunch implies an offer to pay for it. So I went out to eat with her and found out that there was something called going Dutch in America. And so you can imagine eating without a dime in your pocket and finding out quickly that you had to pay. But then I also met a lot of generous Americans. Yeah. So it was the complexity of the American story began to dawn on me.
Well, so let me ask you, because in the book, you look back and you wonder, quote, if your first reactions to American life tended to ungracious harshness.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, so once I came and I encountered winter, I wished that I hadn't come at all. And so in writing the first letters to my family and to my friends, I was trying to describe this bleak weather. And the language I used was, because there was nothing in their frame of reference that they could relate to. So I said to them that it's like living inside a refrigerator. And so I began to judge America, if you like, and to judge America harshly, you know. Mm. So America didn't have good weather. And then because I had American, I found American friends quickly, but they wanted you to wait to be invited before you came to their house. In Nigeria, if somebody was your friend, you could just drop in on them. And you could drop in every day, you know. So I had a friend, and they would always call me to say, is it okay to come visit you in 2 days? And I'll say, look, just we're friends, just drop by. And they said, no, that's rude. You see, I said, no, that's not rude. It's actually rude to seek a friend's permission to visit. And one day I showed up in their house to show them how it's done. And they were a bit bemused. And they said to me, oh, you know, we understand the point, but please, before you come again, you know, you need to warn us that you're coming. And so those were the things that I focused on in my first few months.
Well, we're running out of time here, and I'm very sorry about that, because the book is full of so many beautiful stories. I just encourage people to read it, of course. But I do have to ask you, you become an American citizen. You're a Nigerian American now.
Yes.
And you're telling the story in your memoir of your journey at a particular time right now where there's a lot of questions swirling around this country about who is American, who should be American, about the immigrant experience. What do you hope your story has to add to helping us find answers to those questions?
I hope that my story would add the fact that America is great precisely because of the variety of cultures, of tempers, the varieties of gifts that different people bring from different parts of the world. And I think that variety is the richness and the splendor of America.
So you're happy that you came here?
I am happy that I came to America, yes.
Well, Okay Ndibe's memoir is Never Look an American in the Eye, Flying Turtles, Colonial Ghosts, and the Making of a Nigerian American. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.